It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, listeners, and welcome back to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Tonight's episode is about the things we can't let go of, the memories that haunt us, the love that refuses to fade, and the ghosts, real or imagined, that cling to us long after they should be gone. We've got three spine-chilling stories that explore grief, obsession, and the terrifying consequences of refusing to move on. I'm your host, Jeff Sturdivant, and tonight, I'll be your guide as we navigate the dimly lit corridors of your darkest dreams. Before we begin, a quick reminder that your support means everything to us. If you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to leave us a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you're listening. Watching on YouTube? Give this video a thumbs up, drop a comment, and hit that subscribe button. And don't forget to ring the bell so you never miss an episode. And if you want even more spine-chilling content, head over to ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com where you can become a patron and unlock ad-free episodes, exclusive stories, and early access to brand new nightmares before anyone else. Your support keeps the nightmares alive. Now, tonight we have a very special guest joining us. He's a horror narrator, a self-taught voice actor, and the man behind Silver Underworld's Scary Stories on YouTube. His love for horror started on the graveyard shift at Aldi, where he realized caffeine wasn't enough to keep him awake, but terrifying stories were. Please welcome Silver Underworld.
Thanks, Jeff. It's great to be here. I've been a long-time listener, so being part of Chilling Tales for Dark Nights is a real honor.
It's great to have you. Now, I have to ask, how does someone go from stocking shelves at 4 a.m. to telling horror stories to thousands of people?
You know, that's a good question. It started as a way to stay awake. Mr. Nightmare, Darksomnium, Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, they all kept me on my toes while working those early shifts. At some point, I thought, hey, I can do this too. So, I did. I started narrating creepypastas in late 2021, refining my voice acting and my sound design. And here we are.
And here you are, lending your voice to three chilling stories tonight. What kind of horror really gets under your skin?
Oh man, I have a soft spot for psychological horror. The kind where you don't know if what's happening is real, or if someone is just losing it. Also, anything where a girlfriend or a best friend totally goes off the rails, that always gets me.
Well, you're in luck, because tonight's stories check all those boxes. Three tales of grief, obsession, and things that refuse to stay buried. And speaking of things that don't stay buried, let's get started with our first story. Our first one tonight is Nikki Didn't Go to Heaven by D.D. Wickman, a chilling tale about loss, grief, and what happens when the ones we love come back differently. A grieving family struggles to accept the death of young Nikki until she returns. But when someone comes back from beyond, how can you be sure it's really them? Narrated by tonight's guest, Silver Underworld, and featuring Ricarda Henkel, this is Nikki Didn't Go to Heaven.
One day, there's no more room in heaven. The pearly gates are closed. All the angels come on down. Come on down. It was just a nursery rhyme my grandfather used to sing. A reminder to be good. And to accept things for what they are, instead of needlessly holding on to the superficial. A story of heaven being closed, and even the angels being left outside. I remember asking him once, what would the world look like? He stroked my hair, held me tight, and sighed.
You'll see, dear boy, he whispered. I'm sorry, but you'll see.
My grandfather has been gone for a long time now. His ashes were spread on the lavender fields outside Tomscog, Minnesota. Part of me still gets a sinking feeling when I think of him, and another part of me just hopes he made it through the gates. No, I'm not a very religious person, but a sentence can paint a concept, and a concept can be a powerful thing. Maybe there is no pearly gate in the sky, but maybe there's a sense of peace to experience in our final moments. That's all I can hope for him, both for him and for me. All throughout my life, I had this idea lingering in the back of my mind. It hasn't really affected me in any particular way, but it is something that I have never been able to forget. But some time ago, it became relevant in a way that I would never have imagined. I was working at a cafe at the time. Nikki was my closest coworker. We shared every shift, and she was just a beam of light wherever she went. She was half the reason we had many customers as we did. She was simply a delight, and she made every regular feel seen. She was kind, honest, and genuine. At the end of every shift, she asked me to not just have a good one, but to have the best one. A quirk of hers. Then, she had a brain aneurysm. Most people don't survive it, but Nikki did. Maybe it was a mild one. We were all waiting anxiously for an update, and eventually, word came down. Nikki was going to be all right, with little to no permanent damage. She was going to return to work once her recovery was done. There was a palpable sense of relief in the air, both for us and the regulars. Everything was going to be okay. Of course, that's not what happened. When Nikki came back, she had visibly changed. It wasn't much of a surprise given what she had gone through, but it was clear that something drastic had happened. Even at a glance, she had lost about 20 pounds. It must have shaved her head at some point. It had just started to grow back. She looked like she hadn't slept for days, and there was a tilt to her stance. She was hunched over, as if to lean on something for support. Still, it was Nikki, and we were all relieved to see her back behind the register, even if her smile was a bit crooked. But there were many changes. They were subtle at first. She would forget the occasional name or spell something wrong. I figured it was just a leftover of her aneurysm, something that would go away over time. She was supposed to make a full recovery after all, but seeing the way her eyes glazed over as she talked to other people, it made me wonder, was she making an honest mistake or has she stopped caring? I remember ending a shift with her, and as we closed shop, I waved goodbye. I expected her to say something back like she always did, but she didn't. She didn't ask me to have the best one or even a good one. She just stood there in complete silence, her eyes 1,000 miles away. So instead, I took the initiative. I got back in the cafe, walked up to her, and cleared my throat. You all right, Nikki? I asked.
Yeah.
She sighed.
I'm good. Great.
You seemed...
Seem what?
She turned to me, clearly not interested in discussing the topic further. Expecting an answer, she went quiet. I shrugged it off. Nothing. I smiled. You have a good one.
Yeah.
And that was that. Over the next few days, I noticed more and more things were off about her. She would not only forget her regulars, but actively snap back at them. She'd mess up her orders. At one point, she almost broke the microwave in the break room. She just stood there, watching the plate spin as the spoon she left in there in a cup sparkled. She knew it was wrong. She just didn't care. But I didn't say anything, and I didn't step in. Not until I noticed a shortchanging an older man. He'd owe $6 and had a Nicky of 50. She gave him 34 back, trying to pocket a 10, skimming a little off the top. It was pretty smooth, really. She counted $44, but left the 10 out when she handed the money over. That's when I stepped in, trying my best to make it look like an honest mistake. The old man didn't mind. He'd always liked Nikki. She turned towards me and gave me this look. I've never seen it before. A joyless smile behind darkened eyes. A look that said that she would do her best to ruin my day.
Thank you.
She smiled.
I would have felt awful.
She wouldn't. I don't know how I know, but I saw it. There was no hint of regret behind that smile. I try to be sympathetic. I heard about people having personality changes over massive personal trauma. It's to be expected. But Nikki hadn't just changed. It's like I was looking at a stranger. None of her enthusiasm was there. There was a callous disregard, and even disgust, towards the things that made her so wonderful to begin with. But that also gave me a frightening thought. From all the things I've seen her do, what else was she doing when no one is looking? How far would she go, given how she was seen to, ready to scam the old man? Did I even want to know? During our next shift, I tested her. I'd come back at irregular times, checking in on her when she thought I wasn't looking. She'd be on her phone, leaving the freezer open, forgetting to lock the back door. And, strangest of all, smoking. I've never seen her smoke, and all of a sudden, she was doing it in the break room. But the final straw was at the end of the workday, when I saw her pocket money from the register. It was a complete accident that I noticed. I'd gone back to get a napkin and caught her red-handed. We looked at one another across the room. Her face was like a brick wall, but I could see it tremble. It cracked to reveal that joyless smile and those unblinking dark eyes.
You didn't see what you think you saw,
she said. I think I did, I answered.
No, you didn't see shit.
She approached me. Even her walk was different. She got within arm's reach and put her hands on her hips, tossing an apron over her shoulder.
Who do you think you're talking to?
She smiled.
You think you know me? You think you know this person?
Nikki, you gotta stop, I said. This has to stop.
This has to do nothing.
She laughed.
And you know why?
She leaned in close. I could hear her bite down, as if forcing her jaw shut. Her voice was spiteful, angry, like she was holding back something terrible.
Because if I hear that you've said anything to anyone...
Nikki took a step back, letting her cheerful facade fall back into place. And with the same joyful smile as ever, she put up her two fingers, playful little scissors.
Snip, snip.
I talked to the manager the next day. I hadn't planned on it, but I couldn't keep quiet. I told her about the threats, the register, the change, the smoking, all of it. I tried to be clear that I cared about Nikki, but that she was harming the place and herself. My manager didn't seem a little too surprised. Apparently, others had taken notice as well. She was going to go talk to Nikki later that day anyway. I just had fuel to the fire. I felt awful about it, but thinking back at the little snip snip, yeah. No, I didn't even want to begin considering what she's capable of. There was no way to know anymore. Whatever happened to Nikki, it had made one thing certain. I had no idea who this person was anymore. She was let go soon after. I wasn't there for it, but my manager was visibly upset afterwards. She didn't want to talk about it, so I could only imagine what was said behind the closed doors. I thought that'd be it, but That was only the beginning. The morning of the first shifts without Nikki, I was the first on site. Right outside the doors was a pair of scissors, neatly laid out. Next to them were a handful of sunflowers with their heads cut off. They'd been thrown to the side and left in the dirt, turning a bright blue in the process. Didn't know they did that. There was no doubt in my mind this was a threat. And I could feel a little unease settle in my stomach. An ever so light sweat crawled across my skin. Just as I was about to open the door, a thought washed over me. I checked under the handle, noticing a razor blade taped to the back. Had I pushed down on it, I would have gashed across my palm. I removed it and told my managers about it, but there was nothing we could do. The security cameras for the back area hadn't worked for months. Something that Nikki knew all too well. Throughout the day, I couldn't help but to wonder what she was going to do next. Maybe nothing. Maybe something downright violent. A threat could just be a threat, but there was something telling me that I should take this seriously. This wasn't Nikki anymore. If she is willing to do something like this, demented, on day one, what was she going to do on day two? Of course, there was plenty of regulars who asked about her. Most expressed concern, and a couple of them were heartbroken. But what surprised me the most were the ones who were relieved. Apparently, they seen something as well.
"It's not her anymore,"
an older woman complained.
"It's like she never really came back."
Those words stuck with me, like she'd never come back. It really felt that way. Sure, people can change, but people like Nikki? For the first time in years, it made me think back to my grandfather. The pearly gates are closed. All the angels, come on down. Come on down. For the next few days, the threats were enormous and obvious. A pair of scissors left outside my door, this time accompanied with two chestnuts. By lunch, we got a remote order for 3 bagels and the additional comment, "Keep it. It'll be your last meal." With every poke and prod, I was reminded that there was really no telling with this woman. Yeah, so unsurprisingly, my manager got involved with the police. And from there, it escalated fast. They couldn't find Nikki. Her place was an abandoned mess. Her car had been impounded after being left in the open street. Her bathroom was spattered with drops of blood, seemingly her own. And she was nowhere to be found. We managed to convince the local sheriff that a patrol car ought to come by to check on the shop every hour or so. But us who worked there seemed to be fair game. There wasn't evidence that Nikki was the one behind it. Even everything pointed to it. Still, the threats were real and treated as such. Mostly. 3 days passed with that incident after that. I was beginning to calm down and maybe consider that this was over. There had been no word of Nikki, and all signs pointed to her having left town. I came home from work, dropped my keys in the bowl, wiped my shoes, and locked the front door. I stashed away some groceries and grabbed a Coke. Leaning against the kitchen counter, it had been a long day, and I had a chicken salad ready to make everything better. That and a guilty pleasure episode of Love is Blind. Don't judge. I step into the living room, ready to settle down in it for the night, when I notice something. The curtains in my living room window have been moved. I never opened those curtains. I live on the first floor. I was sitting down when I turned my head towards the bedroom door. My phone was still on the kitchen counter. I couldn't see anyone, but I held my breath. I felt like a prey animal, hoping against hope to not be noticed, if I just kept still enough. But no, Nikki noticed. The sound gave her away long before I saw her. The snip snip of a pair of household scissors, followed by a joyless, dead-eyed grin peeking around the corner. I grabbed a vase from the coffee table and got up to my feet. At first glance, I couldn't tell if it was Nikki. She'd not only cut her hair, but parts of her face. There was a long slit in her nose, reaching almost all the way up to her eyebrows. A couple more nips in her ears, as well as her lips. She didn't seem to mind. If anything, it made her smile harder.
Didn't you get the message?
She grinned, as if to make a point. She snipped the scissors twice. And advanced. It all happened so fast. She jumped over the couch, stepping on the cushions with her raw, bloody feet. She threw herself at me with complete abandon, laughing as she tumbled to the ground, tearing the curtains down as she went. I instinctively threw the vase at her and went for my phone. There was no way I'd get a chance to call for help. She was after me. Instead, I grabbed the first thing within reach, my salad knife. I struck her in the throat. Nikki recoiled, pulling out the knife. There was a spurt of blood cast across the white and sky blue kitchen tiles. She just got a bigger smile on her face as her eyes lock onto mine.
You still don't know who you're talking to.
Her voice had turned into a sickening wheeze as air escaped the hole in her throat. She fumbled her way towards me as her body struggled to stay upright. She pointed the scissors at me.
You don't know.
And with that, she collapsed. I grabbed my phone, stepped over her, and tapped into the emergency service number. I was just about to press the call button when the immense pain exploded in my shoulder. Every nerve in my right half of my body felt like it was been set on fire. I dropped my phone as my fingers cramped, spinning it around to see what happened. There was a light drag coming from my shoulder. Something was stuck in it. Nikki was back on her feet, as if nothing happened. Blood still pouring out of her neck.
I'm Kelly,
she said in a cheerful tone, crossing her arms behind her back.
What's your name?
What? That's all the time I had to say before she attacked again. The scissors that had been lodged into my shoulder fell to the floor, and I ducked her attack to grab them. As I swung around, pushing myself up against the wall for momentum, I attacked her head on, digging the scissors into her left eye. For a second, she was quiet. Her breathing stopped. I could hear my own beating heart and see the pulse rushing through my hands. As a moment passed, she blinked, her right eye unhindered, her left eye pushing against the steel of the scissors. I pushed her away. She should be dead. I buried those scissors deep.
Now I'm Emmett,
she said.
You should be more careful.
A completely different accent and demeanor. She stood up straighter. She adjusted herself, wiping the blood off her cheek. It didn't help. She was bleeding profusely, which seemed to annoy her. She pulled the scissors out, giving me a confused look with her one healthy eye.
Are we killing one another?
She came at me again. I cut her with a shard of my broken vase. Then she said she was Morgan. I cut her with a broken glass from a fallen portrait. And all of a sudden, she was Lillian. I don't know how many times she had cut me back. My arms got cut to ribbons. And she managed to cut slices across my cheek that barely missed going to my ear. I stabbed her over and over again with everything I could find, taking out her eyes, throat, heart, lungs. Her stomach looked like a knife block. And still, she was coming at me.
I'm Roy,
she gargled.
You're gonna love me.
She seemed to literally grow. Her arms extended, her legs bending at unnatural angles, snapping to attention as her bones settled into her sockets. She ripped off the power cable from a nearby lamp, biting it loose. She didn't care that it costed her three teeth. She wrapped the cable around her hands, ready to strangle. Another tooth drooled its way out of her mouth as I was cornered in the bedroom. I tripped over a chair I kept by the bed, breaking it. An old wooden chair that pretty much came with the apartment. I ended up on my back, looking up at Nikki as she came at me with a childlike enthusiasm, a blood-dripping tongue panting with enthusiasm. I managed to get under the bed, but she wrapped the cable around my foot, dragging me back out, kicking and screaming. She was squeezing my ankle so hard that I thought it popped off. Then, a siren. The neighbors must have called the police. As Nikki turned her head, I grabbed a chair leg, heaving myself forward. I managed to get a solid smack across her jaw, causing her to topple over. Pressing my advantage, I crawled on top of her, smacking her with a chair leg over and over and over.
I'm Mark,
she said.
I'm Hannah.
I'm Penny. I'm Nora.
I couldn't stop, and neither could she. She kept coming back, even after the structure and musculature of her face turned into mush. She kept going, long after her words had turned to sounds. I dropped the chair leg. She was barely even twitching, making some ungodly gagging noise. I didn't even notice that I was screaming. Maybe I had been screaming the whole time. It's as if a soul settled back into my body, bringing my actions into perspective. I've been beating her to death, but death just, it didn't come. I could hear sirens coming closer as I wept. Two of her fingers carefully stroke the palm of my left hand as she opened her mouth, and with a herculean effort, she turned her blind face towards me.
There. Nothing.
She gargled.
There. Nothing.
And those empty eyes locked into mine, she said her final words.
Come on down.
The police broke down the door and pulled me away. I barely even remember where they took me. I was so dislocated that I only remember the lights, a dark corridor, a bright ambulance, a flashlight checking my eyes, distant voices, instructions. I'm nurse this, I'm doctor that, officer, sheriff, all asking 1,000 questions at once, and only one stood out.
Do you understand?
And no, I didn't. They ruled it as a psychotic self-defense episode brought on by harassment and mania. There were investigations, evaluations, sessions, everything. I think there was a Dr. Bogan somewhere in there. It passed in a blur. I don't think I could think straight over a month after that attack. It's like it uprooted something deep and disturbing within me. But over time, well, what else can you do but to live? And that's what I did. Now, people know me around town as the guy who survived a home invasion brought on by some kind of stalker woman. I'm okay with that narrative. I don't want to consider that they really ought to call me. What even am I? What was she? I have to stop calling her Nikki. Nikki was long gone. Maybe she never came back to begin with. The scars are still there, but they don't bother me anymore, near as much as those final words. As that eyeless face looked my way, choosing the words that I know only one person would pick. Come on down.
That was Nikki Didn't Go to Heaven by D.D. Wickman, performed by Silver Underworld and featuring Ricarda Henkel. Silver, that one gave me chills.
Yeah, it really makes you think. If someone you love came back, but they weren't quite right, would you be able to tell? Or would you just ignore it just to have them back?
And sometimes ignoring those warning signs can be dangerous. Speaking of which, Silver, you've got something exciting coming up on your channel pretty soon, don't you?
Yeah, I do. On Thursday, February 27, I'll be premiering My Girlfriend Talks in Her Sleep by Craig Groeschel. Now, I don't want to give too much away, but let's just say this. Imagine waking up in the middle of the night to hear your partner whispering something that they shouldn't know. Names, places, secrets, things no one should be able to say in their sleep. At first, it's just eerie, but then you start to wonder, are they just dreaming? Or are they just confessing something?
That's enough to make you sleep with one eye open. Listeners, you do not want to miss this one. Mark your calendars. February 27th, Silver Underworld's Scary Stories. And if you decide to check that out, don't forget to let Silver know that Jeff and the team at Chilling Tales for Dark Knight sent you. Now, let's move on to our next tale. Our next story, Together Forever by Anthony Lay, takes love to terrifying extremes. Some people can't accept that love has an expiration date. And when the time comes to say goodbye, they refuse. But what happens when you try to keep love alive, no matter the cost? Performed by Silver Underworld and featuring Romnex, here is Together Forever.
This all started a little over a year ago when I was scrolling through a certain dating app. I'm a guy in his mid-20s. Just wanted to find someone to connect with. I'm painfully introverted, so going out and meeting people has always been difficult for me. My friends try to set me up with girls that they know, but things never work out. I've spent most of my life just being that friend who the girls love to see as a brother. Well, post-quarantine, and I really wanted to be with someone, So I decided to try and put myself out there with online dating. Making a profile was awkward. I didn't know what to put out there that makes me sound appealing. I took a selfie to show what I looked like, but I was hit with the cruel realization that I was not only boring, but unattractive. Chris, age 26. I live alone, no pets, but I love animals. Watching movies, and my favorite night is binge watching things all night. My picture was of me at an awkward angle, flashing a goofy smile with my brown hair in its unusual shaggy mess. I spent a good hour swiping left and right on my phone screen, reading the different profiles of people in my area. Honestly, most of these women are way out of my league, and it was no surprise that I had zero matches. Anxiety eventually got the best of me, and I decided to just leave my phone on the table. I didn't want the pace of back and forth, so I watched one of my favorite comedy movies to calm me down. A couple of hours later, I took a deep breath to see no matches. In just a few hours of my self-esteem being plummeted to a new low, I know, a few hours isn't long, but there's hundreds of people in my area, and yet, here I am with no matches. I thought maybe I should broaden my area, so I increased the range for matches. It got to the point where my results show women just a few states away. My phone sat quietly in my hand. My heart just couldn't take anymore, so I decided to sleep it off. The following morning, I didn't even want to look at my phone, so I ignored it while I get ready for work. Before stepping out of my apartment, I sucked it up, clicked on my phone to see that I eventually had a notification from the dating app. You have one like. God, oh, my eyes almost popped out of my head when I saw that. I quickly got into the app to find a blurry picture of someone. Get premium to see who likes you.
Come on.
I let out a groan, but succumbed to the pressure of the marketing. On my screen was a stunning woman with shoulder-length blonde hair, a pretty pearly smile, and shining blue eyes. Her name was Mia, and she was on the other side of the United States. She listed some of her favorite movies in her profile, some of which were mine. Mia displayed pictures in her scrubs at a hospital. I assume she works at. Herself in a cringy yet cute duck face pose with a peace sign, and a picture of herself in a dress at a beach. She describes herself as an introvert just trying this whole online dating thing out. Looking for something serious, please. I swiped on her, super like, whatever it was that showed this stupid app that I just want to talk to her. A couple of minutes later, I got a message.
Hi.
I was taken aback. My heart started to thump, and I took a few minutes just to gather enough composure to say, hey. Smooth moves, right? It just took off from there. Fortunately, she seemed pretty talkative and carried the conversation. She asked me the questions like,
what do you like to eat? What do you like to do on the weekend?
And
what do you do for work?
I answered everything she asked, and she told me her answers.
I love meat. I'm a fatty, sorry. I just like staying in, watching a movie or something.
And
I'm a nurse. I love my job.
She was so cute, and I responded to each of her texts as soon as I could. We talked all day, and that made me feel so damn elated. She didn't make me feel uncomfortable. Talking to her was so easy, and God, my heart was beating out of my chest. She eventually gave me her phone number, and honestly, I was a little shy to text her. She messaged me.
Text me, you goof.
I felt so nervous, and I responded, you want me to text your actual number? A few minutes later, I got a reply.
I gave it to you, didn't I?
So I did just that. I texted her, and we continued talking. The day quickly turned into weeks of us talking, and the texts became phone calls. We exchanged pictures every day. Nothing lewd, just smiling faces we exchanged with one another. Mia became part of my life, and I fell in love with her. Our casual conversations became serious talks of being together in the future. I was happy with this. Having someone to talk to and feeling loved was what I wanted. I thought that I was in a perfect relationship until things suddenly took a turn. A few months into our relationship, Mia started to become a little bit obsessive. I don't know what suddenly changed, but she insisted on calling me every hour of every day. She would even call me a few times in the middle of the night just to check in on me. I would wake up in the morning with dozens of text messages, and I didn't reply during that time that I'm awake. She would just call me and ask me how I was doing.
Hi, what you doing, babe?
I wasn't sure what to think. I thought for a moment that this was all normal behavior. I mean, things were going so well that I didn't want to lose me over something stupid like too many texts. When her calls and messages started getting in the way of work, I tried to tell her to ease up a bit. I told her I loved her and that I wasn't up to anything underhand, but she would laugh it off.
Oh, I know. I just can't be away from you for too long.
I worried that the long distance was a little bit too much for her, but I just wasn't prepared to pack up everything to move just to see her yet. I was beginning to lose sleep due to the constant check-ins. There was no way that a person could call and text every hour of every day, but she did so with ease. Mia was relentless. While I was beginning to grow more wary every day, I finally told her that I needed a break, and she snapped at me on a phone call.
No, 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 no! Don't leave me alone! You said that you love me, and I love you. So what if I call a bit? I just want to be with you all the time.
I started to feel bad, as if I was the one in the wrong. But the next day, it got worse. Her calls and texts came every few minutes now. I finally told her in a text.
Okay, enough, enough! I had enough of it. Just leave me alone.
The next morning, I noticed that
I actually had a full night's sleep. Not only did I woke up to no new messages on my phone, I messaged her to make sure that she was okay. But I got no reply. Then the next day came, and still, no texts. I couldn't help but feel bad, so I texted her sorry. Still, no reply. I felt really bad, actually. But at the same time, I felt relieved. It was as if a grip had loosened around my throat and I was free. I wanted to be in a relationship and I think I loved her, but it was so suffocating. That night, I got a notification from Mia with a picture of a sign. Not just any sign. It was one of those welcome signs you would see when entering a state. Welcome to Alabama. And no, this wasn't a picture on Google. This was a picture that she took on her phone to send it to me. Mia was in my state. Which wouldn't be weird, but she supposedly lived in New York. Then she sent me a picture of another sign. Welcome to. She was in the city where I lived in. And then another picture. Except this one had the office where I worked at, along with a text.
Almost there.
I was hit with confusion. Then terror crept when I realized that I had told Mia almost everything about where I worked and where I lived. I heard a light tapping coming from my front door. A familiar yet chilling voice could be heard from the other side.
I'm here.
I stood there in silence, frozen like a deer in headlights. I wasn't sure why. This was someone I loved, but I felt so afraid. Then a sharp, scraping noise began to pierce the silence. She raked her nails on my door.
Come here, baby. Come closer. I know you're in there.
She said with a snarl. For some reason, my feet couldn't move. In a normal situation, you would feel happy about seeing your partner. But I was overcome with dread. The voice on the other side of the door sounded like Mia, but it was somewhat dissonant. As if another lower voice was overlapping hers. I couldn't help but hold my breath. I didn't want her to hear me inside my home. The scraping noise ceased, and her voice let out a wail.
Be with me! Be with me!
I felt my body begin to shake as I stared towards the front door.
Be with me!
I was silent for a moment longer. And then I saw the door now twist. The door began to slowly creak open. It sounded like a scream. When the door was fully open, I was met with darkness. There was no one at my front door. I finally released my breath. And I quickly took in oxygen. Hello? I called out. Nothing responded. I tiptoed towards the door, wary if I just experienced what would just be part of my imagination or something much worse. When I finally made it to the door, I reached my head out of the threshold and looked around. This was another stupid move I made. Before I knew something was wrong, I felt something pressing against my nose and mouth. I started to feel dizzy. Then everything faded to black. I'm not sure how long I was out, but I awoke with a splitting headache, and my throat felt raw. I was staring up into more darkness. My back was against something hard and smooth. While my whole body felt cold, I looked around and realized that I was on the floor somewhere, stripped completely naked. My arms were above me, and I felt cold metal around my wrist. I was handcuffed to a pole or something. My legs were free, but I felt too weak to move them. I heard footsteps coming towards me, and in the corner of my eyes, I could see her. Mia, in a white dress, with a crazed look in her face. She got on top of me. Despite the slight numbness, I could feel her weight pressing on my waist. Mia bent over and placed her lips on mine. I felt the sharp pain, and then the taste of iron touched my tongue. Mia rose, and her mouth was covered in my blood. I felt a warm trickle just down a corner of my mouth. This was no longer the woman I fell in love with. The racing I felt in my chest wasn't from love, but from terror. Her blonde hair was matted, her blue eyes were cloudy, and her smile was stained red with my blood. She was breathing heavily as if excited for this moment and said,
"Let's be together. Let's become one."
She began to lift her white dress over her head to reveal her bare skin. That's when I looked down her body, down her chest, to her stomach, to see another face staring at me. I let out a shock wail. On Mia's stomach, stitched to her skin, was the dried face of another person. A man. She noticed my surprise and slid her fingers down her body to the face that I was staring at.
"I hope you don't mind, babe. He's just another one that I love. But it's okay. I won't love him as much as you,"
she said with a smile plastered on her face. She reached towards something besides me. It was a small paring knife. She hummed as she took the tip of the blade, and it pierced the skin near my cheekbone. I was about to let out a yell, but a free hand clasped around my mouth before I uttered a noise.
"Shh, don't make a noise. Don't move or I'll mess up."
I was able to exert enough strength to resist, and Mia pulled the blade from my face.
"Stop! Please stop moving!"
she screamed, and I continued my attempts to get her off me. She looked at me with eerily pleading eyes and said in a calm voice,
"Don't move, baby. I need your face intact."
Then Mia's eyes widened if she had an epiphany.
"Oh, baby,"
she cooed.
"Don't be jealous of this. Don't be jealous."
She removed her hand from my mouth and grasped the small blade. She had pressed the paring knife into her stomach, on the edge of the face she had sewn onto her.
"Don't worry, baby. You'll have the only spot, okay?"
Blood sprayed on me as I watched in horror as she slowly cut and peeled the excess flesh from her belly. Tossing the face aside as if it were trash, her gaze shifted back towards me. Mia giggled as she said,
"Now, you're the only one for me."
I was frantic at this point. I tugged and tugged my arms. The handcuffs were tight around my wrist, and I could feel the skin tear. Mia inched closer and closer with the knife to my face, and I continued my futile attempts to escape until I heard a disgusting crack. Before I knew it, my right hand was free from its cuffs, and with my left hand balled into a fist, I cracked it against her temple.
Why would you hate your own girlfriend? But that's okay. I still love you.
Her body came crashing down, but I didn't pause for a second. I held my bloody right wrist and limped towards the nearest open door. I had no idea where I was, but I was obviously in some abandoned building. I was surrounded by debris, and I traced every corner for an exit, or at least somewhere to hide.
"Baby, where are you?"
I heard a voice behind me. I continued to hobble forward, and I just ducked away into the nearest room. The room was some kind of medical room. There were old filing cabinets and tables piled up. I quickly squeezed myself into the rubble and held my breath. Her voice echoed through the air as she neared in the room that I was in.
Baby!
I saw through the cracks that she was at the door, looking around like a beast, a monster. After a few seconds, she advanced and I took my chance to go towards the window. The window was already smashed open with bits of sharp glass on the edges. A cool breeze hit my bare body and sent a cold chill down my spine. I carefully grasped the glass in hopes of breaking it to allow an easier escape through the window. When suddenly, I felt a tug on my throat. My body flew backwards and I was back onto the floor.
Mia was standing before me, with her blade glinting beside her.
Be with me! Be with me!
She lunged towards me, and I closed my eyes. I felt the sharp edge pierce the flesh. I opened my eyes to see her staring back at me with wide eyes, and the piece of glass that I had grabbed deep into her throat. My vision was soon covered in scarlet as I pulled the glass out of her throat and her blood sprayed all over me.
Stay! 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 Stay!
Her body collapsed and she slowly outreached her hand to me.
Stay! Stay!
She said as blood filled her mouth. I couldn't help but cry as I ran through the building like a madman. I don't know how long it took it, but eventually I found the exit. I roamed the streets for what felt like an eternity until the cops finally found me. A naked man running through the city covered in blood. They took me in, and I was examined by the EMT. At the hospital, I told the police everything that had happened to me, and they confirmed Mia's corpse at the building I described. Apparently, Mia wasn't her real name at all, and she was on the run for murder of her previous lover, who wanted to leave her. Mia, or whoever she was obsessed. She was unhinged. She didn't want to be alone so badly that she thought she had to do what she did in order to prevent that loneliness. She was afraid of me leaving her, but that doesn't make any of it okay. It took a long while for me to recover physically, but it's going to take me a lot longer to recover mentally, emotionally. But I think things have gotten worse. The other day I was washing my face, and behind my reflection was... It was someone that looked like Mia, and she whispered in my ear,
"Together, forever."
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public would be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.
That was Together Forever by Anthony Lay, performed by Silver Underworld and featuring Romnex. Silver, let me ask, if you had the chance to bring back someone you love, but it cost you something, would you take it?
See, that's the problem. The minute you say yes, you don't realize what it's really going to cost.
Exactly. And speaking of heavy choices, our final story tonight follows a man who makes a decision that should have been final, but finds out it's only the beginning. Our final tale tonight is The Weight of Silence, written by our very own guest, Silver Underworld. Sometimes, when we reach our lowest point, we believe the choice we make is ours alone. But what if something else is waiting for us on the other side? Performed by Silver Underworld and featuring Philip Greiser, Punch Monster Studios, Back to Ashes as Phoenix Fire, and Creepy Face. This is The Weight of Silence.
I used to think rock bottom was just an expression, a place people talk about when they're down on their luck, but never a real, tangible thing. Now I know better. Rock bottom has a smell. Stale beer, cheap takeout. It has a sound. Silence. Broken by the hum of the air conditioner in the empty home, and the occasional crack of knuckles against drywall. And it has a feeling. It's the cold weight that settles into your chest when the job's gone, when the house is gone, and the person you thought would stay forever walks out the door without looking back. This is where I am now. My name is Michael, and this is my story. I had it all once. A good job, a house, and Rachel, the love of my life. Rachel was beautiful. The kind person who would light up the room just by being in it. She had this way of seeing through all the noise and pulling the best out of me, even when I doubted myself. She was the reason I ended up at the company in the first place, pushing me to apply when I was content with less. She believed in me. She always said that I had so much more potential than I gave myself credit for. And she was right. I became a senior manager at one of the top 10 AI tech companies in the entire country. It wasn't about the paycheck, though the money was more than I ever imagined I'd make. My job was to manage a team of developers working on advanced machine learning systems, streamlining algorithms to make them more efficient. My role was a niche, part problem solver, part strategist. I had this knack for taking complex AI models and figuring out how to optimize them, making them faster, smarter, more intuitive. But it wasn't just about the code. I always find ways to make life easier for my team. I built tools that automated the more tedious parts of their work, freeing them up to focus on the bigger stuff. I was the guy they come to when things get tough. People liked me for that. I wasn't just another manager handling down orders. I was in the trenches with them, solving problems side by side. We were working on cutting-edge AI systems for predictive analytics, even smart technologies for healthcare. It was the kind of work that could change industries, maybe even the world. And I loved it. I felt important, like I was contributing to something that mattered. But then, out of nowhere, the company was bought out by a massive conglomerate. Overnight, everything shifted. They didn't care about the years I put in, the systems I improved, or the team I led. To them, I was just another name on the list, another cost that they didn't want to carry. So, they let me go. And just like that, it was all gone. The future I've been building with Rachel, the career that I thought was untouchable, it all slipped away through my fingers. I lost the house, a 4-bedroom, 2-bathroom dream house that I could no longer afford. And after that, everything spiraled. My truck, brand new and shiny just months ago, became a reminder of everything slipping away. Desperate, I stayed up for 24 hours straight, submitting one-click job applications to every tech company I could think of. But here's the thing, they were all connected to the same conglomerate that fired me. No one would give me an interview. My skills didn't matter anymore. My old coworkers and I were even in a group chat talking about how much this all sucks. Some file for bankruptcy. Some have to move across the country to return back to their parents' basement. Some fell into hard liquors and drugs. The world moved on without us. In the end, the only job I could ever get was a generic grocery store down the street. They hired me on the same week. I had to wear a uniform that smelled like stale produce, dealing with rude customers who looked right through me. And my boss? He treated me like I was worthless. Like I never managed million-dollar projects or led a team of brilliant engineers. Rachel. Oh, God. I felt so embarrassed. She'd been a stay-at-home fiancé, supported me as I worked my way up. Now, in this tough economy, she had to get a job too. I needed her help with the bills because my paycheck wasn't enough to cover the mortgage or the truck payments. I hated it. Hated the love of my life had to pick up the slack for me. The man who once had everything in the palm of his hands. But my sweet Rachel, Rachel didn't care. She didn't complain. She still believed in me like I could somehow climb out of this pit that I'd fallen into. She kept saying things would turn around and that I would just had to be patient. But every day it felt like I was falling further away from the life that we were supposed to build together. Then came the worst day at work. I was already hanging by a thread, but that day, it broke. I was stocking shelves when I noticed a customer hiding behind an aisle corner. He was fumbling a water bottle. I was watching him, and he deliberately poured it on the floor, then threw himself down like an actor in some bad infomercial. I knew exactly what he was doing, and when I approached him, he started groaning, holding his back, claiming he slipped. I tried to protest and tell my boss the truth that the guy had done to himself. It should be on the cameras, I said. But the cameras were so ancient that it only recorded in 240p. But the footage was useless. Just a blurry mess of pixels. You couldn't tell if he slipped or he'd fallen from the sky. My boss, though, didn't care. In fact, he seemed to enjoy it. He took the customer's side, yelling at me in front of everyone, telling me to take the blame or else I lose my job.
Apologize to the man.
He barked.
Or you're done here.
The customer smirked, demanding money for compensation or threatened to sue me personally. And that's when I saw it. I saw it. The wink my boss gave him. Like this whole thing was some kind of setup. It was a game to them. A scam. He knew it. He knew he slipped. And that's when I snapped. You two can go fuck yourselves. I spat, my voice loud enough for the whole store to hear. I'm sick of this shit. I quit. The customers froze, watching as I stormed out, leaving my boss behind, standing there, red-faced and humiliated. But quitting didn't make anything better. If anything, it pushed me deeper into the pit. No matter how many times I tried, job applications, interviews, it didn't matter. I was drowning in silence. When I got home that day, I was seething with anger. I clenched my fists, trying to hold it all in, but it bubbled over. I punched a wall, the drywall cracking beneath my bloody knuckles. Then I screamed to my pillow, muffling the sounds of my rage, swearing like a sailor who just lost his ship. The anger kept building, tearing me through like a storm. I didn't realize Rachel had come home early. She must have seen the holes in the wall, the bed a mess where I just threw things, and my head was filled with loud sounds that I didn't hear her. She tried to touch my shoulder, trying to calm me down. But when she did, I reacted. Too fast, too hard. My hand lashed out, and I struck her across the face. The sound of my hand connecting with her cheek was louder than anything else in the room. Rachel. She stumbled back, dizzy, eyes wide with fear, and fell to the floor. I stood there, frozen, horrified at what I'd done. Rach, I whispered, My throat tightened. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to. She put her hand up, gently stopping me. Her eyes filled with tears, but she tried to hold them back.
Michael,
she said, her voice shaky.
I know you didn't mean to. I know this isn't you, but I can't do this anymore. I'm scared, and I don't know how to help you.
I took a step towards her, but she pulled back slightly, her body tense. The realization hit me like a brick. She wasn't just scared of us. She was scared of me.
Please,
I begged.
I'm sorry. I'll fix this. I'll fix everything.
But Rachel just shook her head, her voice barely a whisper.
I'll be at my parents' for a while until you can get yourself together.
She stood up, avoiding my gaze, and wiped her face.
I still love you, but I can't stay here. Not like this. Goodbye, Michael.
I wanted to say something, to beg her not to leave, but the words caught in my throat. I watched her gather a few things, her keys, her purse, and walked out the door, leaving tears behind as it still fell to the floor. I just stood there, surrounded by the broken walls, the wreckage of everything we built, and now the love of my life is gone. I was alone. It's been 3 days since Rachel left through that front door. Seeing her leave with tears in her eyes and see droplets at the floor just broke me. I walked into the bathroom and saw a stranger in the mirror. I honestly thought I saw a monster, but it was just me. I can't keep doing this anymore. I'm broken. I've lost everything. My job, my house, my father, Rachel. My mental health is gone. I don't even recognize myself anymore. Every day feels like a step closer to the edge, and I don't have anything left to hold on to. I was cleaning up the mess in the bedroom, and that's when I saw it. The rope. Dad's old fiber rope. The one he left behind when he helped me move the couch last year. He's gone now. Cancer is a son of a bitch. He was with me on my first breath, and I stood by him during his last. But this, this rope was still here, a part of him, a way out. Maybe this is how it ends for me. Maybe this is how I make it all stop. No more pain, no more failure, no more shame, just nothing. The thought is so clear now. I can see it. I can feel it. And for the first time in a long time, I feel like I have control over something. I won't hurt anyone else. I won't be a burden anymore. Maybe this is the only thing I can fix. I reach for the rope. Maybe this is how it ends. I have no idea how this works, so I just mimic what I saw from the movies. My master bedroom ceiling had those sturdy crisscross wooden logs. I climbed it once to remove some spider webs for Rachel. I wasn't sure how to tie a rope, so after a quick YouTube search, I figured it out. The entire time I wasn't afraid of the outcome because I knew what was going to happen. I didn't waste any time. I climbed on top of the bed, climbed to the wooden logs to adjust the rope. I made sure my final thoughts were my mom, my dad, and Rachel.
I'm so sorry.
Darkness. Nothingness. Now I stand in a void, so deep it feels like the universe itself is gone. My voice echoes, hollow.
Hello? Why am I still here? I can hear myself. Where am I? Wait, what was I doing? Oh, right. What is this place?
Then the blackness gives away. I'm standing in some kind of forest.
What is going on?
The trees are tall, but resemble a wavy, thick shadow. Their branches stretch out like skeletal hands, clawing at the night sky. There's no wind, no sound except my echoing footsteps. Just silence. It's oppressive, pressing down on my chest like the weight of every mistake I've ever made. I don't know how I got here, but my feet start to move, as if I knew where I was supposed to go. I press forward, deeper into the darkness. Ahead of me, through the tangled branches and the endless shadows, I see something that makes my stomach drop. A single light cutting through the void. I got closer and I knew what it was. It's my home. The light was coming from a lamp on my nightstand. There, my home. Isolated in the middle of the trees like it's plucked from the real world and placed into this shadow realm. The bedroom light glows faintly, casting an eerie light on the dark forest floor. My heart begins to pound, faster and faster, an icy dread creeping up my spine. I know I shouldn't, but my feet moved on their own, dragging me towards the door. I don't even have to open it. The door creaks wide, like it's been waiting for me. Inside, the air feels cold, thick, like the smell of antiseptic and something else. Something metallic and bitter that stings in the back of my throat. My living room looks the same. It's untouched. I notice a man in a badge uniform leaning on the doorway of my bedroom. He's not facing me. Excuse me, you're in my home. Can I help you with something? The man didn't turn around to acknowledge me. Excuse me, hello? I tried to tap him on the shoulder, but I wasn't able to budge him. He just stood still. I looked over his shoulder to see what he was looking at, and my eyes landed on the center of the bedroom, and my breath caught on my chest. I see it. It was me. My lifeless body on the floor being held by a distraught Rachel. My lips quivered. I wanted to scream, but my voice is trapped in my throat. Strangled by the horror of what I'm seeing, I step closer, trembling. No, 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 no. This can't be real. No, this isn't real. It's a dream. A nightmare. Something I could wake up from. I have to wake up. Rachel's on the floor holding my discarded body like a doll, sobbing into her hands. Her shoulders were violently shaking with every heartbreaking gasp. Her beautiful face, twisted in agony. I have never seen Rachel like this. The EMTs are now moving, and they all stood around my body, their faces expressionless, like they'd done this a thousand times before. They don't care that it's me, that my life is gone, that I'm gone. I looked over and I noticed a police in the corner of the bedroom, and they are talking in hushed tones, probably discussing paperwork, the logistics of what to come next. But all I want to see is Rachel. I reach for her, her hand trembling, desperate to touch her, to tell her that I didn't mean it. Rachel, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I whispered, but it feels like screaming. It's really silent in this room. My hand hovers over her shoulder. I was hesitating. What if she turns around and sees me? Will she forgive me? Will she understand? I have to try. I can't let this be the last thing she remembers of me. Broken, lost, and taken by an old fiber rope. I close the distance, my fingers barely brushing her, and she vanishes, just like that. Disappears like smoke blown away by the wind. One second she was there, solid and real. And the next, gone, like she was never there at all. No, 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 no! I screamed, stumbling back. The voice echoes in the emptiness, bouncing up the walls and the dark corners of the room. Panic rises in my chest like a tidal wave. I clawed at the air where she was, grasping at
Nothing. My mind racing. Rachel, please, come back. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. I didn't. But she didn't come back. I could feel it in my bones. She's gone. And there's no getting her back. My legs give out beneath me, and I collapse to the floor, staring at the corpse. My corpse. I bare my face in my hands, choking on the guilt, the regret, the unbearable weight of what I'd done. This was supposed to be my escape, my way out of the pain. But instead, I'm trapped here, stuck in this hell where everything I love slips through my fingers, where Rachel is gone forever. And I can't even touch her one last time.
Rachel, I'm sorry.
I whispered again, but the words feel empty now. And then I hear a voice, low and steady, coming from behind me, shaking me to my core.
If you're so sorry, why did you do it? If you knew the outcome.
I whirled around and there he stands. An ominous figure cloaked in shadow. The darkness seemed to cling around him like a shroud. He's terrifying. Not in the way of a monster lunging at you, but in his stillness. His absolute certainty. He belongs here. Like he's always been a part of this place. His bony jaw moves slowly. The only part of him that shifts is not just thin skin. It's actual bone.
Who are you?
I stammer, my voice barely a whisper, my hands trembling.
I am called by many names,
he says, his voice calm, almost gentle, yet full of authority.
Some hate me, others glorify me, but you, Michael, know me well. All too well. I am death.
Death? No. No, you're not real. You're just in my head. I shouted, stepping back, my feet heavy with fear. Death steps closer, moving without sound or motion. He's more like a shadow than a man, shifting like smoke drifting across the room.
Real or not, you're here, aren't you? You made the choice, Michael. You thought it would end your pain. You thought it was the only escape.
He pauses, his voice unwavering.
But it wasn't the answer.
I shake my head, tears stinging my eyes.
I didn't have a choice,
I yelled, my voice breaking.
Everything was falling apart. My house, my job. Rachel left me. Dad's gone. He's gone. I have nothing. What was I supposed to do? Just keep living through the same misery over and over?
Death looks at me, his gaze piercing through my defenses. Though his eyes are just darkness.
You had life, Michael. Breath in your lungs. Time. Hope. But you let the weight of the world convince you otherwise. You chose to end it, thinking it would solve everything. And now, you stand amidst the consequences of that choice.
Consequences?
My voice rises, filled with pain and rage.
I didn't want this. You don't think I wanted any of this? My father's gone. Rachel's gone. My work. Years and years of devotion is gone. What was the point when no one cared? When no one saw me?
Death doesn't flinch. He simply stands there, listening, letting my words wash over him. When he speaks, his voice is quieter,
almost sad.
It wasn't about them, Michael. You made the decision long before Rachel left. You allowed the darkness to settle in, and it fed on you. Pain blinded you, and pain does not excuse you from the gift of life. There is always a way forward, even if you cannot see it.
I laughed, bitter and hollow. Forward? There was no forward. I applied to 1,000 jobs. No one wanted me. No one saw me. My voice cracks, a desperate howl escaping my lips. Just get away from me. Leave me alone. Death's gaze remains steady. He lowered his chin as if he was disappointed. He spoke.
Be careful what you wish for, Michael.
Suddenly, everything goes dark. The ground beneath me vanishes, and I'm floating in a void. Endless, silent, weightlessness. I see stars, far away, galaxies that stretch into eternity, but I cannot reach them. I feel like I've been here for hours, maybe days. Time has no meaning. It's just nothingness. I try to speak, but my voice doesn't carry. The silence stretches on me, crushing me. Fear starts to bubble inside my chest, and I begin to scream. No words, just pure, desperate cries for help, but nothing comes. There's no one to hear me. No one cares. After an eternity of screams, I break. I sob, my tears floating away from my face, lost in this abyss.
Rachel, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry that I failed you. I failed everyone.
The darkness shifts. And suddenly, I am back. I'm lying on the floor of my bedroom. I can see the ceiling, the familiar holes in the wall.
What the? I'm okay. I'm okay?
My heart pounds, hope and confusion mixing within me.
No way. Was I dreaming? Rachel. Rachel!
I scrambled to my feet, my legs still shaky. I bursted out in my bedroom. But as soon as I swung it open, I froze. Standing there, massive and unyielding, is Death, his cloaked figure towering over me. I flinched and fell backward, my eyes widening at the sight of the noose still hanging from the ceiling. My body goes cold with dread.
No, 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 this isn't real. Please, no, no.
Death steps closer, his voice soft yet commanding.
It was not your job to be seen by the world. Your worth was never theirs to measure. The greatest mistake you made was allowing the world's rejection to become your own.
What?
I asked, barely breathing. Death's voice resonates, filling the room.
You spoke of being sorry, Michael. Sorry for failing Rachel.
My eyes open wide.
You heard me in that? That nothingness?
Death lowers his hood, and I gasped. His face is all bone, hollow eyes, but there is something else there. A strange yet terrifying beauty. And his eyes are dark sockets, yet within them, galaxies. I can see the stars, the same stars I've been floating in. A vastness that has no end.
Was I in your eyes?
I asked, my voice trembling, the realization dawning.
Yes.
Death says simply. I shake my head, my voice breaking.
You don't understand. You're Death. What could you possibly know about life?
Death's head tilts, and he steps closer, leaning in, his voice almost a whisper.
More than you, it seems. Life and death are bound together at the exact same time. Why else do you think I am here? There are rules, Michael. Life begins, and I end it. I am the end. But you sought to break that order by taking what was not yours to end. Self-killing is forbidden, and the punishment is eternal.
I swallowed hard, staring up at him, my voice coming out in a croak.
But isn't death evil? Because you don't seem evil.
Death's eyes, those swirling, infinite eyes, don't waver.
Death isn't evil, Michael. Death just is.
I fall to my knees, tears streaming down my face.
Then, where's God in all this? Where was he when I needed him? If life is such a gift, then why didn't he save me?
My voice cracks, a question that had been burning inside me for so long. Death's eyes doesn't waver.
You question God, but did you ever call out to him? Did you cry for help? Or did you bury yourself in anger and despair? You built walls so high, Michael, that even his light could not reach you. Yet even now, you are not forsaken. That's why I am here, Michael. If you believe in nothing, you go to nothing. And look where you are at now. There are rules, but mercy still exists for those who seek it.
Mercy?
I spit, my voice cracking.
Where was mercy when everything was taken from me?
Mercy comes to those who endure. You sought escape, not mercy. You refuse to endure. Maybe I have something that will help you understand.
The shadows around us twist and warp. I stand my ground to get ready for another trip into his eyes. I brace myself and suddenly, I'm no longer alone. I gasped as I saw my father standing there, looking younger than he did in the last time I saw him. Healthier, like a vision from a time long lost.
Dad?
I whisper, my heart shattering all over again. He smiles, his warmth cutting through the cold of the room.
I've been waiting, son.
You're here.
I stammer, tears flowing freely.
In purgatory?
I asked him to let me stay and wait for you.
My father says, looking at death, then back at me.
I saw your future, Michael. It wasn't supposed to end this way. You are meant for more. You're supposed to touch the hearts of many.
What do you mean? I thought I was dead.
I choked out. Confusion overwhelmed me. My dad kneels down in front of me, his eyes filled with sorrow.
That's the thing, son. You're not dead.
What? How am I here then?
I asked, my voice trembling. He takes a deep breath.
I saw what you were about to do, and I couldn't let it end like that. I reached out to Death himself, and he agreed to bring you here, to show you what you've lost and what you still have back in life.
Death's voice echoes, low and steady.
You are meant to do great things, Michael. and your father asked me to consider giving you one last chance. But know this, if you return, you will carry the weight of this choice for the rest of your life. The gift of life is precious. Do not squander it again.
I collapse, overwhelmed. The weight of my emotions, too much to bear.
I don't deserve it. I don't deserve to go back,
I whispered.
I'm sorry.
Death looks at me, his eyes still rapidly swirling with galaxies.
No one truly deserves life, Michael, but it is given nonetheless. Will you accept it?
I look up at my father, his face full of love and hope, tears streaming down my face, my heart aching.
I will try. No. I will do better, Dad.
Death nods slowly.
Then go and live well. And remember, I am not your enemy, but I will come for you again when the time is right.
The world around me begins to fade, and I can now see the stars in the ceiling of my bedroom. The stars and galaxies are heading towards me at full speed. Light has turned my bedroom brighter than white. I cannot see, but I can only hear my father's voice. It was the last thing I heard. A whisper full of love.
I believe in you, my dear son.
I cannot see, but I felt him. I embraced my father for the last time. The darkness gives way to light, and I feel myself drifting, my body heavy as I return to the world that I try to leave behind. I weakly awoke, my arms trembling, feeling drained of all life.
I was still floating. The rope was still wrapped around my neck. I choked, struggled to breathe. I swayed gently in the dark. My chest burned. My vision blurred, and everything just felt off. Desperation kicked in. No. Resolve. The will to live has taken over me. I immediately thought of something clever. The rope was old. If I apply maximum tension, the rope will break. I took action. I swung my body back and forth using whatever strength I had left. I swung like a swing set at a kid's playground. Every time I applied down force, I suffocate even more, but I heard the rope tear. I need to survive. My will is now stronger than ever. Right before I lost my vision, the rope finally snapped. I crashed into a stack of moving boxes. I raised my head, gasping for air, popping my joints, and a lot of groaning. My whole body ached. Like every inch of me was buzzing like TV static. It took what felt like forever to regain my senses. I remember everything that happened in limbo with my father and death itself. If my father knows that I'll be able to change my future, I must believe that. When I finally got up, I noticed the mess I made. One of the boxes had been labeled Mod Tech Company. My old well-paid job. Its contents were scattered across the floor. Papers, files, pieces of my past, and a picture of me and my beautiful fiance. My eyes landed on my work contract. I don't know why, but something made me pick it up. Maybe out of spite. I started reading, flipping through the pages until I saw something that I'd never noticed before. No way.
I gently scratched my head to start using my brain. I'm good at complex AI systems. I'm sure I could figure something out here. So after reading everything, including fine prints, terms and conditions, you know, all that kind of things, I always save a copy of every document I had, and I'm glad I did. This paid me back really good. I found something. So what I found, it's called a clawback clause. It said that if any financial fraud was uncovered, the executives would have to return every bonus and stock options they'd taken. My mind raced. I remembered the whispers of how the COs and his cronies had been manipulating the numbers for years. They stole millions, and it was all there, hiding in plain sight. From that moment on, I knew what I had to do. I built my case, gathered more evidence with my lawyer, and luckily, I met an anonymous whistleblower who was directly contacted with the CEO, and they were the key to expose everything. Here's a short story. The company had to pay back what they stole, and the corrupt executives were dragged into court, and they were all jailed. And in the chaos, the board needed someone they could trust to lead the company back from the brink. After many votes from the new board because of the persuasion from my old colleagues, they chose me. I know how AI works, and it's going to help millions. I started another company. It's not just a mental health program. It's something more. I don't call it therapy because that word still carries too many barriers. The stigma around mental health, the lack of access, affordability, and the belief that we should handle our problems on our own. So I created something different. It's more of a companion to humans who are mourning and not yet ready to move on. It's an AI-based app called The Weight of Silence. It's 100% free. The inspiration came from my father and death. I lost my father, but I found old recordings of his physical form and his voice. I took those memories and feed them to this app. Now, when I need him most, I can hear him and even see my dad again, offering me advice like he used to. It was as if we were having one more phone call, one more conversation. And this isn't just for me. Anyone can use it. People can hear their loved ones again, and with the help of AI, get advice on tackling life's challenges and find closure. This isn't about replacing therapy. It's about reaching out to those who feel, as I once did, trapped, hopeless, and ready to give up. I made it my mission to heal the damage that I caused to myself and to those around me. To my beautiful wife, Rachel, you're my rock, my grace. I love you, honey. Now, as CEO, I'm not here just for the company, but for the people, for you, for all of us. So ladies and gentlemen, let this moment be on camera. I want the world and the viewers on YouTube to hear the story because it matters. I know what it's like to hit rock bottom. Fair warning, this next part is graphic, but it's important because it might help someone listening. I nearly ended my life, and when I did, I met death face to face, and he gave me a second chance. Today, I'm gonna tell you exactly what happened and how I got here on this stage talking to you right now. My name is Michael, and this is my story.
That was The Weight of Silence by Silver Underworld, performed by Silver himself, along with Philip Greiser, Punch Monster Studios, Back to Ashes as Phoenix Fire, and Creepy Face. Silver, that one was heavy.
Yeah. This one came from a dark place. The idea of making a final choice only to find out you never really had control to begin with. That's terrifying.
It really is. And it makes you wonder, what's scarier? Facing the unknown, or realizing the unknown already has a hold on you?
That's the kind of question that keeps me up at night.
Silver, this has been a fantastic episode, and we're so glad you were able to join us tonight. Before we wrap up, let's remind our listeners where they can find more of your work.
Absolutely. You can find me on YouTube at Silver Underworld's Scary Stories. I'm also on Instagram, X, Twitter, and TikTok, where you can support my work and get exclusive content. Or if you want to reach out to me to say hi.
Listeners, be sure to check out Silver Underworld's work and let him know you heard him here on Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. And don't forget, this Thursday, February 27th, he'll be premiering Craig Groeschek's My Girlfriend Talks in Her Sleep. Trust me, you won't want to miss it. And if you enjoyed tonight's episode, you can support us by leaving a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening. If you're watching on YouTube, give us a thumbs up, drop a comment, and subscribe so you never miss an episode. And for those who want even more chilling content, don't forget about ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $7.99 a month and enjoy ad-free access to all of our horror stories. Your support keeps us going, and we appreciate every single one of you. I'm Jeff Sturtevant, and it's been my pleasure to guide you through tonight's terrifying tales. Don't forget, we'll be welcoming a new guest narrator each Wednesday, so stay tuned for next week's surprise guest, where they, and we, will once again turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Sweet dreams, listeners. Sweet dreams.